Looking for some amazing TV to stream? Indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are now streaming on Hulu. Then you can move to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits, streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking.
Hello, welcome to CarCast and Edmunds Podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Alistair Weaver and our lovely guest, Jessica Caldwell from Edmunds as well. How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Everybody's doing well. Jessica, why don't you explain what you do at Edmunds, and that'll kind of lead into our topic of discussion for today.
Yeah, so Edmunds, I look at a lot of data. So I'm looking at all the transaction data that happens in the United States, but I don't know who you are, but I know what you bought. I know if you put a down payment. I know if you took a loan out. And if so, what was your interest rate? I know what color vehicle that you bought. I know if you traded in your Ferrari 458 for a Fiat 500, which has actually happened one time. I have seen it in the transaction data. So all those data pieces to create insights of what's going on in the market, make sense of it, especially over the past few years. It has been very topsy-turvy. So looking at what consumers are doing and what they're buying and how they're buying it has all been very, I think, helpful to us to let us understand what's going on right now.
So speaking of data, a friend of mine has a Cybertruck, took delivery, went, paid, took delivery of it. And then today, Tesla reached out and said, "We lost your cashier's check. Please pay us again." Do you have data on that? How often do you think that happens?
They already gave them the truck. I'd say
it's
not his problem at that point.
Yeah.
That's magnificent. Also, yeah. Like, you've got to wonder what happened with the guy who had a, you know, whoever had the 458. And, you know, did they go to Vegas? Did they put, like, the keys on the table and then, you know, arrived with the 458 and walked out with a Fiat 500? It's a good story. I'd love to dig into that.
I'm sure there's something there. Or, you know, somebody got divorced, yeah, and that's what they got instead was the Fiat 500. The guy's, yeah, like, I gotta downsize a little bit, or the girl, I gotta downsize a little bit. I'm gonna go to the Fiat 500. Hey, look, it's still Italian. I'm keeping it in the family. You know, there's a theme there.
We love the rags to riches stories when someone has maybe an older, not very good, some compact car, and they're trading it in for a Range Rover. Like, we're always happy about that, but this one was. Yeah, it was a bit like, yeah, what happened here?
Yeah. What we thought about talking about was, what's sort of the status of the car values of new cars, used cars, kind of what's happening? Because we've seen drops in prices on EVs. We've seen markups that were being charged initially that are now gone. And how does that affect people financially? And is it a good time to buy a used car? It's probably not a good time to sell your new car, but sort of just digging into the status of it. So where do you guys want to start? Just sort of on the high level, like, what's happening with new cars?
Yeah, I mean, I think to understand what's happening in the used car market, I think you have to look at the new car market first. And I'm sure it's been talked about a lot on your podcast about the high prices that we've seen over the past few years. That has abated to some degree, but we had high prices because there was no inventory. So when that happens, prices went really high. And now we've seen prices decline as inventory has come back, and we're starting to see incentives out there again, which we didn't see for a while. And because of that, we're seeing that really affect the used car market, because when there were no new cars to be had, people were going to the used car market because, let's be honest, Americans need cars. So if you can't get them new, then you're going to have to get them used. So those prices spiked as well. And now it's all starting to normalize. And that is where the chaos is happening, because all of a sudden, like, what you thought about the market a year ago is no longer true. So you have people with these vehicles that maybe they didn't want that much because they kind of bought in a bit of a panic state because they thought, oh, my dealer has 5 of them, I'm just going to buy this. And we have seen that before in history. And so they're with this car. They've lived with it for a year or two. They don't really like it that much. It's not working for them. So they're going in to trade it. And because the values have fallen, they overpaid, they bought high, and now they're selling low. And they're not happy about that. And I think that is causing some tension and a bit of friction here in the auto market, as it's just been very atypical, I would say, for probably about 2 to 3 years.
if you're paying cash for the car, you still walk away with some money in your pocket, although you've taken a loss. But if you've been financing the car, you could be upside down. If you're rolling into negative equity, like, what do? Like, if you go, hey, I'm going to go sell my car, and the bank goes, great, now cut us a check for $20,000. We'll take your car and your cash.
Yes. If that is you, then you're just holding on to that car. Please don't sell it, because at this point in time, you're going to take a bath on it. And that does not feel good. No one wants to be in that situation. And that's a situation that a lot of people are finding themselves in right now. They're like, wait a second. It's not, you know, it's not untypical for a car value to go down. You know, you've owned it for a year, you owe more than it's worth. That's pretty common. But what is not common is the amounts that we're seeing. We're seeing it, you know, that portion be thousands and thousands of dollars. And that's where people are like, wow, that's, you know, that's how you get, you're trading in your vehicle, you're buying a Toyota Camry, and then we see in the data you paid $48,000 for a Toyota Camry. We're like, wait a second, that's not possible. Well, it is if you're trading in all of your negative equity into that loan. So
yeah,
if that is you, you're going to be stuck to, the smartest thing to do is just to hold on to the vehicle as long as you can. Because if you're driving it to the wheels fall off 14 years, then it doesn't really matter what the value is today. It's just, it matters when you go to sell it.
Dickie, I know you've been with Edmunds. So just for context for people listening, because they're used to hearing my less than dulcet tones. But so at Edmunds, like, the editorial team obviously looks a lot at product, but also gets involved in you know, stories around buying and owning. And Jessica's team really dig into the market data and have a great analysis. So of course, we lean on heavily to understand what's actually happening in terms of transactions. You've been with the company, I think, nearly 18 years, and we're in the motor, you know, in the auto industry before that. Is this kind of unprecedented what we're seeing right now in terms of used car values falling, people underwater? And we have a new report that I know you put together a couple of days ago that's showing how many people are kind of underwater with their car payments. It's a kind of negative equity that we're unfortunately so used to with homes and going back to 2008 and everything else. Is this kind of unprecedented at the moment?
It is, because never in the auto industry was inventory the issue. The inventory issue has always been, we had too many cars. We have to incentivize them. We got to move them out, all of that type of stuff. We have never been in a situation where there was too few cars. I mean, it happened once in a while when a car was brand new or it was just really hot for a second, or the new, you know, Volkswagen Beetle came out, stuff like that. But never like on a massive scale like we saw in 2022 because of the microchip shortage. So in terms of like even working this out, there was like, everyone's kind of like feeling it as they go along. A lot of automakers were like, wait a second, like, you can't buy out your lease because, you know, people are buying out their leases because they don't want to go buy a new car because there weren't any available and you're overpaying. So the best deal in 2022 was just, if you had a lease that was expiring, great, buy it out. That was great. Even some of that was starting to get you know, a little bit different. So it is very unprecedented what we are seeing, because there never was an under inventory issue. And I think, because of it, there's no rule book, there's no history book that we're like, oh, this is what's probably going to happen. It just feels like there's like a shoe dropping constantly, and it's like, okay, what's it now? And negative equity, which we are looking at, is on the rise, no surprise, I think, with that. But it is just, some of the amounts are scary, because you have people out there with, you know, with loans, and you can't buy a vehicle for very cheap, you can't get an interest rate for very cheap, and now you have a lot of negative equity on top of that. That's going to cause a big problem for people out there.
So we're depressing a load of people as they're like driving along on the highway, sitting in a vehicle which is worth a lot less than they hoped, because it feels like a double whammy. And I'm about to go on to, I'm basically going to pour egg on my own face here, because as an editorial, as we talk about on the show, we bought and owned vehicles, and we actually have a prime example of this, which we can talk through. But it feels like a double whammy that a lot of people paid over sticker price. I mean, that was particularly true of EVs, but it was also things like Kia Tellurides, mainstream vehicles. And then when it depreciates further, it's almost like a double whammy, isn't it? You get whacked when you buy the vehicle, and then you get hit again when you try and sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely so. And I think that's what is not feeling good. And also the fact that people paid high interest rates, likely, you know, interest rates were on the rise. And so it's like they're stuck with this high car loan. And Americans were used to like low interest rates when it comes to cars. I mean, we were the home of 0% for 60 months, 0% for 72 months for so many years. It's like, we all of a sudden now the average new car loan rate is 7%. Like, what?
Yeah,
like,
and some higher than that, some 11, 12%. I, you know, we didn't really prep for this question, but I was going to ask you, just based off of, you know, doing this for so long, roughly where are we on how many people are leasing versus buying for cash versus financing?
Okay, well, almost everybody has a loan of some sort. No one in this country is paying cash. It is pretty funny. It's like, yeah, I guess, you know, if you're out there right now and car prices are dipping, if you're paying all cash, great. This is the market for you. Go buy a car if that's what it is. But most people do finance. So right now, leasing is fairly low for where it normally is. It's probably about a quarter of sales are leased, a little bit less than that, maybe 24%. And then the rest are usually financed either by the dealer at the dealership, by outside lending, and or, you know, some sort of banking credit union type of a situation. But very few people are actually paying cash because leasing has been not a great deal either recently, just because of the high interest rates are affecting leasing and sort of the unknown predictability of what the vehicle is going to be worth in a few years. So the lease deals, if anyone's out there, probably have noticed and are not good. And that's the most common complaint that we get. It's like, I am trying to lease the same exact vehicle that I own currently, and they're asking for $200 to $300 seems to be the most popular amount again. And they're like, why am I paying $300 for the same exact car per month on a lease? And that is a hard concept, I think, for a lot of consumers to wrap their minds around. And so leasing has kind of dropped from like a third of sales down to like, you know, in the low 20s, I would say.
Unless you're in the EV market, because it was interesting looking at the report and trying to wrap my head. There's some fascinating statistics about this. Anybody who wants to read about it, we can put a link with the YouTube. We can actually, I think this is public domain, right, Jessica? This is the report.
This what?
The report we have, you know, we can go ahead and read it. This is out there. This information, it's been picked up by a lot of publications. That's really interesting. So anybody who wants to read it, we can make it available and the data behind it. But I guess the one thing, you know, the one thing that doesn't necessarily is differentiate between EVs and gas, because in the EV market, more people are leasing because of the tax credits. But also, and we can, maybe this is a good segue into our experience with the Mustang Mach-E. In the EV market, the whole depreciation curve seems to be even more exaggerated at the moment, particularly for non-Tesla models.
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, you have Tesla, which is about 60% of all new EV sales. So that's the lion's share. And that's gone down from, you know, 90% a few years ago. They're constantly dropping prices. It almost feels like consumers can't even keep track of where the pricing is at any given time. So with them dropping prices, the demand really just falling, you know, quite significantly, as a lot of, you know, it feels like a lot of early adopters have bought EVs. So now EVs have to sell to middle America and more of the middle market. And that's going to take a lot longer and a lot more convincing to do. So prices for EVs, demand for EVs have definitely fallen, hearing so many complaints about that. And that affects the use side. So, you know, right now, if you are looking at an EV, leasing, like you said, is a great option. A lot of people do that because of the tax credit that you can apply to that 3-year lease, which makes sense. Or even looking at used EVs, because they have really hit a steep depreciation curve. The only issue with used EVs is that there's not a ton of very compelling used EVs out there, because a lot of them have just recently come out within the past few years or so. And people that are in this market kind of want the latest and greatest, like whatever the new toy is. You don't want the old toy on the block. It's a very fashionable market. So sometimes there isn't some demand there. But yeah, there is definitely a difference between what we're seeing in the EVs versus the mainstream market.
So if we look, we can come on to Matt's, because I know we're going to talk about Matt's truck in a minute, which I think
I'm not looking forward to just, it, but just do it. Just tear the Band-Aid off.
Just see him quietly exit the show in a fit of tits. But if we, like, let's just talk, because we talked on the show before about the Mustang Mach-E that Edmunds bought. And this is a product that, when it was new, we as a team were big fans of it. It won an Edmunds Top Rated Award. It was, you know, and it is and remains a good fundamental product. It's a good family SUV. Now, we were that classic buyer in the pandemic. We wanted to get into a car early because we wanted to tell the story of living with it. So we bought a 2021, and I had the data inside me. The MSRP was at the time 45. The MSRP has tested, because I think we had some like premium package on it, things like that, Blue Cruise. It was 53,700. But what we paid was 61,700. And I remember signing off the deal and the team saying to me, it was supposed to be 10 grand of markup, but we negotiated down to 8.
Yeah,
and the feeling
proud,
at the time
you?
Was like, well done, guys. You know, well done, everybody. Well, it's not, yeah, wasn't just guys. Well done, everybody. We're now down at, you know, we've got 2 grand off. So we paid 67,100. And we've since done just over 18,000 miles in it. So not a huge amount. Matt, Jessica's probably got my idea. Matt, what do you think we are down to? And what do you, because we're about to sell it, because basically we've told the story. What do you think we're down to?
I mean,
18,500 miles.
18,500 miles, and how old it is. You would look at a car like that and go, all right, I paid 60 something. Can I get, 48? Can I get 45 for it? And is it enough to just kind of walk away or break even on it? Maybe lose a couple of, like, lose your deposit, lose your whatever, lose your down payment and stuff. But can you, like, the thing was always like, if you're going to trade in your car or sell your car, be like, just give me enough to pay off the loan and I'll walk away from this thing. And then we knew we were taking the loss on everything else, your down payment, whatever. So if you could walk away with breaking even on it, and I don't know what the number is, call it 45 grand, you'd probably be okay. But you tell us, what's the value of that car?
So we were a business. So we did pay cash rather than financing, which alleviates the burden a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'll give you the two stage answer. So 2 months ago, it had 16,000 miles on the clock. We were offered 28,000. Two months later, we've done 18,500 miles. That's basically today, 23,700.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's toilet bowl cleaner disinfects both the toilet brush and bowl for 2-in-1 disinfection, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Should have sold it 2 months ago.
So,
and then, well, you were like, oh my God, it's less than half.
So leaving aside that bit, I mean, the basic reality is we paid with the markup 61,700, obviously plus the tax. And now we are being offered 23,700. So that's pretty much in round figures, that's a 40 grand loss purely in terms of depreciation.
Yeah.
Over 18,000 miles and what, 3 years, two, little more than 2 years, 2 or 3 years.
Now, this is because of a number of things, right? Like you were saying, Jessica, is, well, one, you guys needed to get early on to test the vehicle. So you did pay a bit of a markup on it. So that was a little bit kind of, let's just call it wasted money. Sorry, but it's a little bit wasted money. But in the bigger scheme of things, we can get into, oh, it was a business expense and there was a write-off involved and you guys were testing the vehicle. Forget all of that and just go, this is what the normal person would have done side by side with you. They would have paid the markup. But then prices on those cars at some point dropped, right? Ford dropped the prices on the Mach-E. Do you know specifically what they dropped, like your spec to? Because some were dropped like $2,000, some were dropped like $7,000 or $8,000 or something like that.
Yeah, the GT dropped most off the top of my head. I think it dropped four or five for the vehicle that we have. And, this is a relatively recent thing. You know, I was looking for our personal car at one last March, so just over a year ago, and being quoted like $900 a month on the lease. And the dealer saying to me, I said, what deal is to be done? And the dealer saying to me, there is no deal to be done. The deal is we're not charging a markup. But he said, but then we have 27 in stock, which is unusual for us because to date we've not really had any. And this is people canceling orders. And it just felt, that I don't know if you've seen the film The Big Short about like where you suddenly have this tipping point in the market where everybody suddenly goes, hang on, or Christian Bale's character suddenly says, hang on a minute, this doesn't make sense. It felt a little bit like that moment. And I guess now we're seeing it play out. And so, you know, they're not really selling very well in the new market, and therefore used car prices are dropping. But I guess, Jessica, maybe put it to you, this is a kind of double-edged sword, that it's bad news for us, but actually, if you're in the market for a used car at 25, especially if you can get one for 25,000 with the tax credit on the used car, that's actually a really good buy, isn't it?
Right. So that's the flip side of the coin, is where's the silver lining, is there are affordable used cars out there. As Jessica was saying, when we had a chip shortage, new cars you couldn't get, so used cars were really expensive. And used car dealers were just naming their price at that point. But yeah, you can get a decent used car now at a fair price, or a decent price.
Yeah, and for the used EVs, the $25,000, the income requirement is where I'm seeing most consumers are kind of hitting an issue with, because income requirement is lower on the used side than the new side. So that is an issue. But yeah, it's like finally, it feels like dealers had all the power there for a little bit of time, which they weren't used to. And now it's all of a sudden, now consumers, I think, have got a bit more wiggle room. Not folks that have a vehicle that's 1 to 2 years old, that's different. Alistair, I think at this point, let's just keep the mocking for like a 10 year test.
Yeah, we should. I mean, maybe I shouldn't talk about it too loudly. Just quiet.
I mean, financially, yes, she's going to look at the numbers and go, I don't know if you want to sell this stuff now. You're going to be taking a huge hit, but you're going, but we run a business and we have to get into the new car. We have to sell, we have to free up some cash, even if it's 20 cents on the dollar, to get the next car, whatever the next car may be, right? You guys ordered your Cybertruck. Who's paying for that? How many Mach-Es you have to sell?
Well, four, it would seem. I think this is where Jessica's obviously the real expert in all this stuff. So sometimes, you know, we're making these purchases. It's a strange thing, because to give people an example of how kind of strange the market is at the moment, we're also simultaneously selling our C8 Corvette, which we bought at MSRP for just over 80, and we are now selling it for 61. So we're probably about to write a story on this. Now, I know the C8 is a bit of an edge case. It's an enthusiast vehicle and all the rest of it. But if you think about it, we've taken a $20,000 drop on a C8, and the C8's actually done more miles. It's done 28,000, not 18. And we've taken a $40,000, not far off, drop on the Mach-E. So even when you put all the fuel costs into it, the tire costs, the cost of basically running a Corvette, which are obviously substantially higher, it's still been cheaper than a Mustang Mach-E. So the market is all over the place at the moment. But I mean, that is probably, I'm right in thinking, Jessica, I mean, the C8 is a bit of an edge case, because it's still a desirable vehicle. And if it was a luxury SUV for 80,000, it would probably have been taking a bigger hit.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we look at like luxury EVs, like the luxury large car, like a Mercedes S-Class. Like if you want a three-year-old, one of those you can get. I mean, granted, we're looking at percentages here, not prices, but that's a steal. You know, you're not paying 120, you're paying like $70,000. But yeah, for something like a Corvette, which is, you know, it's a lot of car for the price, I would say. And most people would categorize it as that. And I think people are literally waiting for those type of vehicles to go to the used market to get into a price range that they can afford. So I think that makes sense. But yeah, when we look at the percentage drops of our Mach-E versus our Corvette, that's where it really starts to hurt, when you go from, you know, losing 25% on the Corvette versus the Mach-E. I don't even want to say it out loud, but that's where it's a tough one for us. But you know, yeah, so I do think maybe let's just keep it until like the battery goes sideways on it, and then we could do a study on that. That would be maybe interesting.
I mean, there's...
Well, talking of a vehicle that we have kept longer, we had a Model Y, which we've kept longer. And actually, that was, I think we paid 67 for that off the top of my head. That's still worth about 30. With more miles, more time, more wear and tear, and Teslas seem to be remaining a little bit stronger than some of the other brands, which I guess is also propping up their desirability despite all the price cuts.
Yeah, there. I mean, the model. I think the Model Y is performing a little bit better. The Model 3, I think, is where we're seeing those depreciate quite a bit. I think to get 25 for a few year old Model 3 is probably pretty good at this point, because you're seeing them for sale like at dealerships for like 27, but it's an EV issue, really.
So actually, we should do that before. I was going to say, let's look at what, you know, do some practical consumer advice that protect, you know, like what to do if you're a used car shopper, what's to do if you're, you know, in this position. But before we do that, we should probably talk about Matt's truck.
Yeah. Now, before you tell me how much I'm taking a hit, I'm curious. One of the things we haven't seen typically in the industry is the auto manufacturers doing a huge price reduction in the thousands of dollars, sometimes into five figures, right? You know, $10,000-$12,000. Is it just a matter of time before, you know, we're a sue happy country? We're not seeing a class action lawsuit. Everybody that's taking a hit on their Tesla or some other EV and going, hey, you guys drop prices and you're offering arguably even a better car. You know, all of us that bought a Model 3 or whatever, you're destroying the market on that car for us. Now, we know there's depreciation and stuff, but when the manufacturer is doing it and there's no way out of it, what's the thought there? How come we haven't seen that yet? Or maybe it's happening. We just don't really know about it yet. Maybe it hasn't caught the media's attention.
Yeah, I definitely thought I started to see Tesla owners start to congregate together during that time period where they were just, it just felt like the price drops were a lot. Maybe they were not significant enough, you know, a few thousand dollars here and there. But it feels like if this was going to be a thing, it would have become a thing already. Because right now we're starting to see prices like this, that sort of time is over. So it's, I can't imagine that. If it was possible, they would have done it.
I mean, you guys just issued your report. You just set it out. This is why we're here talking. I mean, how many lawyers are going to get that report? Maybe that's what's going to trigger. Maybe you guys are the ones who are going to trigger all those lawyers to go, hey, maybe we should start talking to customers pretty quickly. But what we're talking about, and yes, we're going to get into sort of the lightning and the sort of what a recommendation would be for consumers possibly. But this isn't across the board on all cars everywhere. Like, look at the collector car market and certainly some of the auctions that have happening even the past couple of years, not just this past year. Auction after auction seems to be bringing in almost record numbers. Most recently, you know, Barrett Jackson just did, you know, whatever, record numbers in their Scottsdale auction. I think Mecum had their biggest year ever. And online auction platforms are have massive revenue, gross revenue. So I can't really say specifically which cars are moving the needle, but the collector car market seems to be there. So some cars, I guess, wait it out enough, you hit your depreciation, and then the pendulum starts to swing the other way. I don't know if your Mach-E in 30 years from now is going to be worth $78,000, but
I wouldn't be playing the depreciation curve with our Mach-E. Build that as a business model.
The Corvette might get a little bit more attention than the Mach-E, although you've got 18,000 miles on it.
You've got a lot of them out there as well, but
yeah. All right, how am I doing on my Ford Lightning?
Just go back. So what you paid?
You know, I think the truck was about $100,000 all in. It's a Platinum. It's got pretty much all the options, dual motor, blah, 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 big stereo, fancy interior, it's, you know, bed liner. You know, it's got, I don't know what all the check boxes were. I checked all the boxes and then, and you're right. I was like, oh, I've got a 95 Lightning. This will be fun. I'll get a 2022 Lightning. And then I was like, what the hell? $100,000 for a pickup truck. It seemed like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Alistair, you and I were going, boy, these car companies, they're really trying to get people to get into a $100,000 pickup truck. And they keep optioning it up to see if you can get an F-150 or a Ram for $100,000. Well, they did it with my electric truck. They put a battery in it and it cost $100,000.
But you didn't pay markup. So
I did not pay markup. I paid sticker on it. And it was an early one, you know, made some calls, try to call in some favors, blah, 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 try to get it without a markup. And that's where I am.
So you've done 6,000 miles.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, maybe it's about 6,000.
So looking at the Edmunds appraisal tool, which actually gives you an estimated range, we think your truck, based on the VIN, is worth 50 to 55.
Great. So half, less than half.
So half.
Yeah, half.
So
half. Okay.
Half. So I'm not even going to calculate the cost per mile.
Don't do it.
There's no point in doing the math on it. I'll take 85, Alistair. You got 85? I'll take 85.
That's,
and then,
yeah.
Yeah, no.
Well, it feels like, Alistair, this is like the reverse of Antiques Roadshow. Like, you're hoping that it's going to be so much, and you're like, actually, no.
No, you're right. This is
Antiques Roadshow. It's Antiques. Was there a US version of Antiques Roadshow? Jessica's husband's British. Have you watched it in England? Was there an American version?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have one. I didn't know there was a British version.
Oh, no, I'm sure the British version started it, where you get to the end and it's like, here's a carriage clock that we found in the attic, and we think it's worth 20,000 bucks, but actually, no, it's a copy. It's worth 20.
Yeah.
You guys, Alistair's been over here, like Tammy's thrifting business. She got like somewhere in a bag, she found like a Pokemon card or something in there. And I don't know much about it, but somebody's like, that could be worth $1,000. And it was just like tucked into a thing. Actually, one of the most amazing finds in that regard was years ago with Adam Carolla, he purchased a Paul Newman car before they were really taking off. And it was just a kind of a shell of a car. It was kind of really in pieces. So when we were buying the cars back then, they weren't at auctions. They were in the back of garages and shops. So the guy's like, buy the car, but you got to take all the stuff, take the toolboxes, take all the spare engine pieces, everything. And then when we brought it all home and unloaded it from the semi truck, it was a big, like rolling, a tool cart. It was kind of empty, tucked into the bottom drawer with just trash over it was a Paul Newman racing suit. His real racing suit that he raced in that car. So I don't know. Maybe it's funny because you buy a car like that for, you know, back in the day, I don't know, low six figures, 100, 150 grand. And I think the suit alone is probably worth that now. So he basically, got it all for free. Kind of interesting. That is not happening in my case, by the way. There's nothing special hidden in my truck.
Let's leave aside the Paul Newman. I think we're getting excited. So we've got a problem that we have the Mach-E, and which is taking a major haircut. Matt has his truck, which is still driving around at A. We are kind of real, you know, in a sense, in a real world situation with these vehicles. What do we do?
Right. What do we do? Somebody like me who finances the truck.
I'm going to give you guys both a big box of tissues because I think that's appropriate at this point in time. Yeah. Well, and Alistair, in our case here at Edmunds, it's slightly different because there is a cycle that has to happen. That the new cars have to come in, the cyber trucks of the world have to come in, because otherwise I would say you just got to keep the car. There's no reason that you should take a $40,000 hit in the span of 3 years.
The idea is that we're buying it as a proxy for the consumer. Mm-hmm. Matt is a real world consumer in that respect. So if we leave aside like the business bit,
yes,
let's imagine that it's Alistair who bought this vehicle with my own cash, and Matt bought his truck. You know, and it's not just, we should say, it's not just EVs. What we're talking about also mm-hmm. applies to my EVs. Might be an extreme example, but also it's applying to gas vehicles as well. And what we're saying, 20% of people are in negative equity at the moment, or just over.
Yeah, we're seeing that 20% of people that are trading in their vehicle to buy a new one are in a situation where they have negative equity, which isn't a record. We have seen it higher before, but what is a record is the amount of negative equity involved, which is over $6,000. So, in our case, since the vehicle was purchased in cash, there's no negative equity involved. But if this was a real world consumer, I would say, you're going to have to keep the car. Like, you're going to have to love the Mach-E. You're just going to have to drive it. It's going to have to work for you. That really is your option until the market turns, until things get better. Because, you know, what else are you really, there's not really an alternative in terms of which you can offload it any place else. It's not like there's a secret channel that exists in which people are dying for Mach-Es. You're not going to sell it to a different country. There's nothing, you know, there's none of that really involved here in this case. So for that normal consumer, you know, you're keeping it. The issue that we generally see when people get really tripped up is when they start doing things like they're adding to their family. All of a sudden, you decide you want to have a third kid and you own the Mach-E, and you're like, well, can't do it now. And in which case, you know, lifestyle dictates that you take the financial hit. But generally speaking, negative equity is only going to apply to you if you go, if you're going to sell your car, you're going to trade it in. If you decide to keep it, then it doesn't really matter. You know, doesn't really matter what the value is if you decide to drive it for a long period of time. So
it's a bit like
the living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So it's a bit like holding stock. You know, I think, you know, anybody who's dabbled in the stock market has probably bought something or a fund or whatever, which has then gone down. And the argument is, unless it's catastrophic, you sort of, it becomes what they call a long hold, doesn't it, in financial speak, that you just hang on to it.
I mean, kind of, except you're not financing your stock and your stock could potentially go up one day, where our cars will not. These particular cars that we're talking about are not going to go up. So it's tough. But if you're leasing a car, because you mentioned earlier, if you lease the car, you're leasing your, you know, your Audi, you know, S4 or something like that. And then you want to just like, hey, it's up, I'm going to go get the same thing. What is your recommendation? Don't. Your recommendation is is to just buy it out and keep it for a few more years.
Yeah, well, the good thing what we are seeing is the market is starting to change. Inventory has grown. It is not where it used to be. Generally, it was around 3 to 4 million. Now it's getting, it's, you know, in the 2 million range. And incentives are coming back. So, you know, if we look just a few months ago, I think the lease rate was somewhere like 17%. Last month, it was 24%. So it's gone up because that means there's more deals out there. So if you're leasing a car, then you may be in a little bit of a better position when that lease is up sometime this year, because at least you're going into a market where there are some deals that exist. We're starting to see even some 0% for 5 years, which we didn't see any of that. There was some 0% there for like 3 years, which no one does that any longer. So you're coming back into a bit of a friendlier market, maybe not as friendly as the one you bought your vehicle in, but everything, as you know, has gone up in price. It's like this, we're talking about cars right now, but we could be talking about groceries or restaurant prices or hotels or anything else, because it's like, if you think you've owned something for 3 years or 4 years and you come back to buy something else, it's like everything has gone up. So, you know, why would we expect cars to be much different?
And if you're leasing the car and you figure, oh, I'm just going to keep it, I'm going to buy it out at the end of my lease. Well, maybe that makes sense. It's more so if you can pay cash. But if you're going to end up financing it and have a high interest rate that's probably even more than your lease, then I don't know that that makes the most sense to do.
Yeah. And I think that's a tough, because you really have to do a lot of research in this market. Because even if you look at, you know, a used vehicle, it's like, yeah, you're going to get the savings on the price. But a used vehicle interest rate on average is 11.4%. Even if we look at vehicles under 3 years old, it's still 10.4%. So you think, oh, okay, you know, people buy those vehicles, they probably have good credit. You know, you're buying a 1 year old vehicle, people on average are still paying 10%. So maybe your answer is a certified pre-owned. You're looking at that because a lot of those interest rates are lower. They're subsidized by automakers. So looking into that. So, you know, if you're that consumer that's kind of like, I don't want to do the research, I don't really want to put too much thought into this, I just want to get a car, it's like, this is not your market, because you really need to look at new, you need to look at used, you need to look at certified pre-owned, you need to look at leasing to find your best deal, if that's important to you. And I'd say most people, you know, paying money is important to them, and saving money is important to them. So doing the legwork is probably more important than ever, because things are starting to change a bit. When that happens, it gets confusing.
And that's why, to a certain extent, we exist, because we have a lot of advice content on the website, if I can get in a shameless plug. Basically, I was talking to Ron Montoya, who's our, as Jessica knows well, is our kind of consumer advice specialist on the team. And he had an interesting idea I just wanted to put to you, which is, if you're in a situation, and you kind of alluded to the example where you have a third child on the way, and that sort of, you know, the Model 3 no longer works for you. If you need to get out of a vehicle into another, that actually taking the negative equity and building it into a lease is actually a good way of managing your payments. Because in theory, the lease prices are cheaper than buying it out new. So if you're in a situation where you need a vehicle and you want to manage your payments, you can actually trade in your vehicle with negative equity, lease your next one for 3 years. Uh-huh. You're still going to have to effectively amortize the negative equity, but it's a way of getting the vehicle off your hands, getting rid of the negative equity. And then mm-hmm. in 3 years' time, you've got a choice. You either buy out the lease or you go back into a finance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine you saying that because generally when we look at lease interest rates, they're a lot lower. Like they're probably about like 5% versus the market rate at 7%. It's just that you have to be in a pretty strong financial position because if we're looking at average negative equity of 6% or $6,000, rolling that into a 3 year lease payment, that's going to add a lot of money to that, to that lease payment. So it's like, you're probably leasing a vehicle for $1,000. So you know, it just depends. I think what situation, you know, if you can't afford a vehicle for $1,500 a month, I'm sort of wondering like what's happening in the situation as to why you're in negative equity in the first place.
But yeah. that's getting into mortgage territory, isn't it? Let's be right, about it.
Yeah, you are.
I saw in our transaction data a few months ago, like someone had bought a Cadillac Escalade and they were financing at like 20%. Like I won't even tell you how much the monthly payments are, but you can imagine a $100,000 vehicle for 6-7 year loan at 20% interest rate is,
wow.
Just put on your credit card at this point. Like what's happening?
Yeah, I mean,
are we almost at a stage now? I mean, there's almost a kind of realization in the market that we're going through this big correction. The inventory starting to come back, deals are starting to come back, used car market is reacting to that. So I think what we're saying is if you find yourself in this position, route one is hang on to it. And then route two, if you have to kind of swallow the hit, then you're probably going to be almost trading down in terms of vehicles, that you're going to end up having to buy a cheaper vehicle and almost absorb the negative equity to keep your monthly costs at a sensible rate. But obviously that's not a pleasant place to be.
No, I mean, generally you look at trades, everyone always wants something bigger and better. And that's really the American way, right? So to mitigate that situation, a cheaper vehicle is probably where you would need to go to keep the monthly payments in a range you can afford. But that's easier said than done. It doesn't happen that often.
I know where you can buy a fairly inexpensive Mustang Mach-E.
And an F-150 Lightning, currently.
Well, no, that's expensive. The Mach-E is paid for. That's ready to go. It's cleaned, it's charged,
If we turn this around and like starting to look at, okay, so there's a degree of pain in the new car market, or people with nearly new, or I mean, you know, 2 year old vehicles, kind of not that nearly new now. If we look at the positives and where the opportunities are in the market, if you're a consumer, we've talked a lot on this show, and I know we've talked a lot in the office, EVs are too expensive for the vast majority, but that's really holding the market back. The average transaction price is too high. You know, we're not seeing those $30,000 EVs that we're craving. Actually, if there is this correction in the used car market, getting into a 2 year old EV with 20,000 miles on the clock, you know, we know battery degradation from all the data that we have is not a significant problem. It's not an iPhone. It's not 2 years and chuck it away. It's actually, you know, a 2 year old $25,000 2 year old 20,000 mile EV for a lot of people is a really desirable proposition, either as a first car if you can live with the infrastructure and anything else, or particularly as a second car. Then isn't this to some extent solving some of the concerns that we have around EVs, just in terms of getting people into vehicles? And now, you know, if you think about how long the Model 3 has been around, even the Model Y, a lot of those will be coming off lease. There should be more coming into the market.
Yeah.
I mean, it should in theory, right? But the issue here is infrastructure, I think. If you need to buy a vehicle that's under $25,000, you probably aren't in a situation where you can install a home charger. You probably lived in a shared living situation where it's very difficult. This is probably your only car. You know, you're not someone that's just a family of 2 to 3 vehicles. So even though cheaper, I think EVs are going to be helpful, that's not the only equation we're solving for. It really is the larger infrastructure issue. And that's not necessarily in anyone's, you know, any one person's control. It's not in the automaker's control. It's like, you know, they're probably like, hang on, we're doing our part. We're introducing cheaper EVs. We're, you know, we're trying to set up our own charging stations. It's like almost like if we had rewound time and General Motors was like, okay, you have to sell cars and set up all the gas stations. It's like, that's essentially what like some of them are starting to take on. And that is, you know, definitely a hard proposition. So it's weird because EVs, it's like, it's not just the vehicle and the vehicle price issue. It's a much broader issue, which we can't really relate with internal combustion engines because the infrastructure was already set up for us, or for all of us, I guess, on this call, maybe not.
Yeah, we're not that old, but we talked a lot on this show about the whole infrastructure thing, and maybe we should have you back on and talk about that in terms of it'd be lovely to talk about like EV, you know, EV rates of adoption and everything else, because that's where, you know, we talked a lot about like personal experience of charging and, you know, how this plays out. And it certainly also doesn't help in the market at the moment that, you know, as we came on as we're recording this, you know, FSCA is potentially bringing in external advice to look at bankruptcy proceedings. You've got share prices plummeting. You've got same with Lucid and Rivian have been hit by that. So, you know, there's a lot going on in the market. GM obviously having a lot of difficulty actually building and successfully selling its EVs. So it's, you know, it's a hugely interesting market. But I guess coming back full circle, I guess we've talked a lot about EVs and our specific examples, but this is not an EV situation. This is a market situation that people are facing. And so whether you're sitting on an EV or whether you're sitting on a gas power vehicle that's in negative equity, mm-hmm. the basic principles remain the same. And I suppose in some ways it's probably easier to hang on to a gas vehicle because you're less susceptible to technology and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, there's some gas powered vehicles that have historically always been a great buy. Like you look at something like a Toyota Tacoma that holds its value. You buy one of those, you're selling it at what you paid for years. So, you know, there definitely are extremes on both sides. Our Mach-E versus a Tacoma, or even some of the more maybe not Jeeps, but maybe like a Jeep Wrangler, but like body on frame SUVs, those type of vehicles tend to hold their values well.
We sold one of those recently, didn't do that well.
Nothing is like the good news is if you're in the market for a used car and you've got cash in your pocket, buy something used, pay cash, and you're gonna end up getting probably the best deal around. So I think we're gonna leave it at that. Jessica, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it, and great information. Little sad on my part. I think you guys kind of screwed up my day, but aside from that, we'll move on. And then Alistair, you're jetting away, right? You're hitting the road or the air.
Yeah, I'm hitting the road to go and drive a new EV. So I don't know whether I'll be invited. Now maybe it'll cancel the airfare after everything that we've talked about. But I guess look, I mean the overall thing is, you know, at Edmunds we've always been, you know, fans of EVs, and you know, we'll continue to follow that market. They're great products, and I think it's a road that we're on. And I don't think it's a road that, you know, it's a road that might correct a little bit, but it's not about to do a massive U-turn and just cancel the EV journey. So there are always going to be bumps on the road, and this is a fairly big bump. And it's a fascinating time to be involved in the industry because, you know, it's at some point this is going to kind of correct itself and we'll go forward again. But it's a, you know, it's an interesting time for sure. So yes, I'm off to drive another new EV and we'll see how that one plays out in the future.
Yeah, and actually we got a Toyota Tundra on the way. I think it's being dropped off today. So I'm going in a different direction for the next week. All right, guys, thanks so much. Of course, you can always go to edmunds.com and you know where to follow us on our social media accounts. And for those of you that want to watch this and not just listen to it, you can check us out on the CarCast YouTube channel. You can see these shows in their entirety on YouTube. So until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag of the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.